You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.
This is New Hampshire Now on 91450 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Ryan. I appreciate you joining us for the program. This hour of the show is brought to you by ARP New Hampshire, as well as the Concord Food Co-op. And this segment of the program presented by Concord Orthopedics. Experience the difference of true specialty care by going to Concord Orthopedics. For more information, check out concordortho.com. We are at Concord Orthopedics today here on the program, and we're excited to be joined by Brendan Higgins, doctor here at Concord Orthopedics. We're going to talk today about ACL injuries and recovery, as well as a little bit about his work with the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association. And Dr. Higgins, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Good. Appreciate joining us for the show. So let's first off talk a little about what ACL injuries are, how they occur, and we'll get it particularly today from a weekend warrior type of perspective, or an individual that will come about having an ACL injury but is not necessarily a high school, college athlete.
Yeah, so ACL injuries are one of the more common sports medicine type injuries that we see in the United States. We estimate there's probably somewhere around 500,000 injuries in the United States every year. So it's a pretty common injury. It typically actually occurs from a non-contact injury. In other words, this isn't from a collision or a tackle per se, or hitting a tree or something like that. It's usually more of a pivoting injury and does not involve contact with another athlete or a structure or something like that. And it's very common in any kind of cutting and pivoting type sport, basketball, lacrosse, soccer. And interestingly, and one of the things that's gaining a lot of research right now is it's actually much more common in females than it is in males. And there's a couple of different reasons why we think that's the case. From the standpoint of, as you mentioned, kind of a weekend warrior athlete, not necessarily a competitive high school or competitive collegiate athlete, we still tend to see quite a few injuries in that population, patients somewhere between the age of 20 and even up to 50 years old. And these days, people are staying so active much later into life that, we can even see that into patients that are in their 50s or 60s. But primarily, you're probably looking at people in their 20s or 30s, and the mechanism is often the same. Some type of cutting or pivoting. Sometimes this can happen even in a workplace environment. Skiing is probably one of the bigger contributors in that age group, especially in this area with the proximity to the ski mountains. In terms of what we do for treating these injuries, it really depends a lot on the patient, on their desired activity level, on what sort of activity they want to get back to. If they're relatively young and they want to get back to a very active lifestyle, then usually the treatment kind of in the end winds up being surgical reconstruction. And what I mean by that, and what I mean by the term reconstruction, is the ACL or the anterior cruciate ligament, because of where it is, it doesn't really heal very well. You can't really repair it. And so what we usually need to do is take tissue either from somewhere else in the patient's body, or potentially even from a cadaver, and reconstruct the ACL. And another important thing that oftentimes people aren't aware of, but along with ACL injuries, oftentimes people have injuries to either the cartilage in their knee or the meniscus in their knee. And that's a very important part of the puzzle as well, so to speak, and an important thing to address. And again, depending on the patient and the patient's age and activity level, that's often something that needs to be fixed as well.
So is the ACL in the front of the knee or the back of the knee? And also, from what I understand, there are generally no warning signs in regards to a potential ACL injury, where an athlete will, if you watch professional sports, it happens just as you said, where the individual will be cutting and there'll be no contact and they'll just kind of fall down and be in pain. So generally, it doesn't look like it's excruciating pain. It's just kind of like they know something happened. Where is the ACL specifically in the knee, and B, is there any warning signs where you'll feel something prior to a tear, not just necessarily right prior to it, but for leading up to it for a period of days, weeks?
Yeah. So the ACL is actually really best described probably as being right in the middle of the knee. We have ligaments on the outside of our knees, and they're called the collateral ligaments, that are on the kind of the medial and the lateral aspect of the knee, if you will, but the cruciate ligaments, of which there's two, the ACL and then the PCL, which is the posterior cruciate ligament. And they're called cruciate because they cross, and they literally sit right on kind of the inside of the knee. And the main purpose of the ACL is to prevent your tibia, the lower portion of your leg, from moving forward relative to your femur. In regards to, are there any kind of warning signs for an ACL injury? Usually there's not. You know, this oftentimes happens in some of the most highly conditioned athletes in the world that have no history of previous ACL injury or potentially no history of knee pain. This can be, you know, professional football players or professional basketball players or Olympic caliber skiers. And it can really just take a very slight pivoting type movement for the ACL to tear.
So you mentioned the potential for this to happen while skiing. And as a skier, this is always one of the things that kind of concerns me to some extent, where if you're playing football or basketball and you tear your ACL, you just kind of stop. When you're skiing, the concern is that you are doing it while you're skiing. So when does that injury usually occur amongst individuals that are skiing? Will it be while they're, you know, at full speed? Will they, and how do you go about dealing with it at that point?
Yeah, so it depends. It's a little bit hard to say exactly when somebody may tear their ACL. In competitive skiers, we have a good idea of the kind of the mechanisms for this, and it's usually when skiers are coming around a gate and their knee kind of drops into mm-hmm. the inside, or if people are going off a jump and they land what people will term way in the back seat, so to speak, where they land leaning way back, and that puts a lot of force on the ACL. Moguls are definitely an area where people have a tendency to tear their ACL, and people typically right away they know, and they're usually not going to ski much further after it happens. It probably often is associated with then falling shortly thereafter. And again, depending, some people can cope pretty well even immediately without an ACL and are able, they'll tell you, I just felt something and I was able to continue skiing down the hill. Other people, that's it, and they're coming down in a sled with ski patrol.
So tell us a little about your work with the U.S. Ski and Snowboard, and because, again, the knees are such an integral part of skiing, and I'm curious if there is ways for prevention, because a lot of times, again, you find yourself using your knees a lot when turning, particularly in moguls or in trying to control your speed. And as a skier, there's always a concern about the wear and tear that you're putting on your knees, because you can feel it in your knees more so than pretty much any other sport.
Yeah, thanks. So, I had a tremendous opportunity to do my last year of training, my subspecialty training in sports medicine out at the Stedman Clinic in Vail, Colorado, which has really become one of both the surgical leaders and research leaders in the sports medicine field over the last 10 or 15 years. And they do a lot of the coverage and potential surgery if needed for members of the U.S. ski team. And as part of that, I spent quite a bit of time working with the U.S. ski team, both in the United States and South America and Europe, and continue to do that now. It's a great opportunity for me to go out and continue to learn about my practice, but then it's also a great opportunity for us to work with these athletes and help them both in prevention and, if needed, in treatment all across the world where they're training. And you're absolutely right. I think we're learning more and more recently about the importance of prevention in ACL injuries in general, particularly in ski type injuries, particularly also in female athletes, I think has become a big focus. We're starting to understand a little bit what the main causes are, the potential causes of the increased incidence of ACL injuries in females relative to males. And skiing, maybe more than any sport, has really embraced this and started to work on prevention. A lot of this is focused on a term people call neuromuscular control, and a lot of it is kind of landing mechanics, which are crucial in skiing. Typically, when somebody tears their ACL, it's because their knee bends and kind of goes inward relative to their body. And it's a lot of prevention training is designed at preventing that one singular motion. And that can be a combination of on trying to increase the hamstring strength relative to the quadriceps strength. That's an issue that a lot of athletes are what we call quad dominant, meaning that their quadriceps in the front of their femur are much stronger than the hamstrings in the back. Also can be working on the hip abductors, the muscles that are in your hip that kind of pull your leg and pull your knee outward. In addition to just learning the proper mechanics of landing and cutting and pivoting, and that exists at the Olympic level, but quite frankly, and maybe the most important message I can send to folks that are listening to this today, there's ACL prevention programs all over the place, and you don't have to be an Olympic athlete to do it. A lot of physical therapists in the area have ACL prevention programs, and quite frankly, you can even just go on YouTube or online and Google ACL prevention programs and do a lot of this stuff, you know, right in the confines of your house. But I think it's particularly important. It's particularly important, as you mentioned, for those weekend warriors who are heading up to the ski mountain, you know, for the weekend and maybe don't do as much physical activity or strength training during the week. And again, it's particularly important for even the late middle school and high school female athletes, as that's really becoming quite an issue in orthopedics and sports medicine.
That is Dr. Brendan Higgins joining us here at Concord Orthopedics on the New Hampshire Now program. This hour of the show is brought to you by ARP New Hampshire as well as the Concord Food Co-op, and this segment of the program brought to you by Concord Orthopedics. We've mentioned several times now that this injury is more prevalent in females, and it begs the question as to why. I mean, why is it more common in females, and is it a genetic issue? And do you think that perhaps, you know, genetic engineering of some sort could prevent this type of injury moving forward?
Yeah, it's kind of a million-dollar question in sports medicine these days. And there's a couple of factors that we think contribute to an increased incidence in female athletes. And it's hard to say that any one specific factor is the main cause. But part of the reason is, as I alluded to before, the difference a little bit in what's called neuromuscular control. And that's the body's ability to prevent that knee from collapsing inwards. Females tend to have stronger quads relative to their hamstrings than men do. And what happens then is that when athletes jump or land or even just cut, the quad strength causes their knee to be straight as opposed to being more of a bent position, and that puts the ACL at risk. Another factor is that in the knee, that the anatomy of the femur, the top bone of the knee, is that there's a notch in the middle of it, and that's where the ACL travels. And in females, that notch tends to be more narrow than it does in males, and we think that that narrow notch can be a risk factor for ACL injury. Additionally, as you mentioned, there are some studies that have indicated that there may be a bit of a genetic predisposition to this. There are some folks that think that there may be some hormonal factors involved in this as well. And then the other factor involved is just the overall shape of the lower extremity in females as compared to males. Causes a little bit of a higher angle of the way that the femur comes into the knee, and that puts the ACL at risk as well. So all of those things are thought to contribute to the increased incidence of female athletes sustaining ACL injuries.
In conclusion, I would assume that there is a tremendous financial investment and interest within professional sports teams, as well as, you know, U.S. Ski and Snowboard, in this type of research, because, you know, as anybody who follows sports knows, it could cost a team millions and millions of dollars, whether it's in terms of just paying the athlete, and obviously insurance kicks in to some extent in regards to that, but just a season lost. If your best basketball player goes down with an ACL injury, your chances to win a championship may be diminished, not just for that year, but for years to come. And that means franchise loses value, ticket sales, and all that, in addition to you know, the millions of dollars you're paying that individual. So how does that all work? I mean, is there investment amongst sports teams that have obviously aspects of their organization, which are dedicated to prevention, wellness, treatments, and personal growth for athletes. So they invest in the athlete themselves. But do they also, you know, and there's each team has relationships with orthopedic surgeons and with team doctors and such from generally from large hospitals within that region. But how does the research aspect work? I mean, do those teams fund the research? And because you would think that there would be, as I mentioned in the open, a huge aspect of investment from teams to try to figure this out, because the fact the season can be lost and the type of money that be lost if you have injuries go down, these individuals go down with these types of injuries.
Yeah, that's a great question, and you're absolutely right, and we're starting to see more and more of that, particularly just within the last 5 or 10 years. The NFL does give a lot of money for ACL prevention programs and ACL research. The Major League Baseball does the same thing. Major League Baseball also has a big focus now on youth athletic and pitch mm-hmm. counts and elbow and shoulder injuries, and so I think we are starting to see a larger emphasis by professional organizations placed on, you know, both injury treatment, but more so injury prevention, and trying, because a lot of these things wind up being habits that need to be formed at a young age, you know, to try to really ingrain in athletes. Unfortunately, despite kind of everybody's best efforts to try to treat these and try to prevent these injuries, we still see them occurring quite often, particularly in sports such as football and skiing, and particularly in competitive skiing. But there are certainly sports medicine organizations and specific kind of research institutions, one of which, as I mentioned before, out in Vail, Colorado, at the Stedman Clinic, that does have formal relationships with many of the professional sports organizations and continues to work on this every day.
Yeah, in regards to pitch counts, I think it may have been Dr. Kurtz or Dr. Androla that had the anecdote that child who had ever pitched in the Little League World Series has pitched in Major League Baseball. And I thought that was pretty pretty interesting for a number of reasons, because a lot of players have made it from the Little League World Series to Major League Baseball. But when you throw too much as a child, it has, you know, significant detrimental effects as you move along. Dr. Higgins, appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
This is New Hampshire Now, 1450 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Ryan. This hour of the program presented by ARP New Hampshire, as well as the Concord Food Co-op, and that segment of the show brought to you by Concord Orthopedics.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.